coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Welcome back, everybody. You've reached Hey Kids Comics. We are already in a damn fine mood of...
actually where we're supposed to be.
Right.
Because this is the third episode of a five-episode or five-issue arc.
Which
and
means...
traditionally, this is where we derail.
This is where Clay Houston would like to say we get all grab-ass with it. Because we think it's over, and then we remember that in the next one we roll over and look at each other and say, "Oh, in the cold light of day, it's a different thing." We are joined tonight by the esteemed our antiquarian colleague, the one that has brought. Wait. I said I was going to read this on the show. Let me find it.
Let me find it.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
I said a prepared statement.
I have a prepared statement from Cole and I in our email chain this morning. When I said we're basically just going to turn the show over to Kelly anyway. And Cole said pretty much she's the empress to our troglodytes loosed upon the arena, which is pretty much what she is. Kelly Long joins us again tonight, the Kelly Sutra, bringing so much classic class to our show. And couldn't be more thankful to have her here. We are already having a great time. Cole, what are we doing tonight?
We are in, like I said, our third chapter of period pieces. We are on Hey Kids Comics 232, period pieces, when in Greco-Rome.
Yeah.
And last week we were joined by Weldon Adams, and he blew my mind with the, and I couldn't stop thinking about all week, the Secret Society Egyptian comic book combination. And now we move on to we've talked about the time before time, and then we talked about ancient Egypt. Now we move on to what should be one of the easier of our story arcs, which is the Greco-Roman period. But what I found out through my research was one would think it's easy except for the fact that finding a needle in a stack of needles is not necessarily an easy task to achieve. So where do you think we should start? Let's start with Kelly. Kelly, where do you think we should start? You're like the fifth host of this show. You've been on so much.
Yeah, well, I mean, Steve Martin on Saturday Night Live.
Wait, she's going to get a jacket. The next time we see her, we'll give her a...
Finally, I'm going to get recognized with a jacket.
You get our jacket, our five-timers jacket.
Five-timers jacket. That's going to be amazing.
We're not giving anyone just because it makes him mad that he doesn't have one.
Yeah.
And he'll just shake his fist at me from Texas. Kelly!
Right.
Let's start with Greece, because it technically came before Rome.
That's true, because if it wasn't for Greece, they would never have had the idea for Rome.
Kelly and I were talking about that before the show. We were like, I love the fact that Rome looks at Greece and says, that's a nice socio-ideological culture you got there. It'd be a shame something happened to it.
But got co-opted.
That's right. Give it to me.
Yeah, they just show up and say, give me the keys. Here's
but
some grain.
In many ways, it's sort of like with their, theocratic, their religion, though, was largely, it was sort of like when Nosferatu was made. It's like, no, we're not ripping off Bram Stoker. that was Dracula. This is Nosferatu. So basically the same thing. They were just trying to dodge the copyright issues.
Right, right.
But Juno is nothing like Zeus.
Well, it's like how we decided that aluminum is pronounced aluminum. We're like, that name is too hard to say. I like Mars. That's
yeah, that's so true.
There were differences. I mean, there certainly were similar. But what the Romans would do is they would show up and they would actually go, hey, you have gods. Well, they're now our gods, too. And let's find similarities between things like our religion and some of our basic laws. We're going to throw down some of this stuff here. But then we're going to build up your town. And so then everybody lived in harmony. The only people that didn't live in harmony, I mean, with the Romans were really the Christians, because they were fighting on that religious thing. The Roman pantheon grew with every kingdom they overcame. And Greece just happened to have a lot of stuff that was similar, but Romans were bringing stuff in from the Etruscan. And so when you're really talking about comparing Roman gods with Greek gods, you're really kind of comparing Etruscan gods with Greek gods that were similar.
Damn,
and then they grew into something.
And yet again.
I can't. And the show is Kelly's Game 7.
That's right. We're like those little moloids that hang out with Mole Man. We're just like little yellow goggle-wearing...
You guys are great.
You're doing great.
No, it's okay. You guys, it can't be scholarly every issue. So
I'm going to be dumb right now, but I think I'm right. The Odyssey falls into this category, correct? Into this epoch, this time period that we're going to be discussing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you had the Iliad first.
Okay.
And then the Odyssey.
Okay, good.
Really, I'm filled with shame that he didn't point out that on his own, you know.
It's been a long time. I get my crossover period weird, right? So I don't want to jump into Rome when I'm talking about Greece. So I'm trying to keep it, I'm trying to be as accurate as I can in front of Kelly. I'm trying to put on a good, if it was just you and me, Cole, I don't give a shit. I'd say whatever. I'm like, and then Buffalo Bill Hickok rode into town. Like, what? That doesn't make sense.
On a Tyrannosaurus.
So I guess if we're talking about Greece first and ancient Greece, I think we have to start with the big one, right? I think it's the easiest place to start.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And that would be the movie that launched 1,000 vibrators and workout routines, as well as I would say
this is the word that you heard.
But the interesting thing about that is somehow 300 is some of Frank Miller's least controversial work. I don't know how that works. But
yeah, oddly enough, apparently if you do a period piece that's far enough back, then everybody who might take offense is dead.
Right.
That's true. Or they don't care because they don't know enough.
So let me ask, I have an interesting question.
Apparently Miller's studio is haunted by the ghost of Xerxes.
Only it keeps hitting its head on door jams.
Like, how do you live? What are you, Yoda?
Being that Kelly, you are highly trained and versed in the classics and the time period, and I guess even Cole, being a provocateur and a convention staple, has anybody ever come to you with issues with 300 not being historically accurate?
Not necessarily. They would come. Not. I mean, like, was it historically accurate? You know, were they actually using those words? Technically, no. What they were asking was it? You know, was that real? So, I mean, it was real, but not necessarily in the Frank Miller way. Were the Greeks fighting the Persians all the time? They were constantly fighting Persians. And you had the Greeks, but then you also had Alexander, who conquered part of Persia and then lost part of Persia when he died. So Persians were considered barbarians. So I'm going to go into a couple little things here. And it's not just the Persians that were also feared because of where they were. You're talking about the east of Greece. So also on your way to Greece, which was also terrifying, was the Amazon. So they kind of loaded in stories everybody that they really feared in the East because it was such a big threat. And you can tell in the artwork if they were a big threat if they had pants on. This is for the Greeks because they thought that were barbarian, you know, that barbarians only wore pants.
Really?
So in the
essentially, we'll see who wears the pants on this con.
Exactly.
Did they even wear rompers?
No muumuus, no culottes.
Oh,
wow.
Oh.
Culottes.
Dungarees?
capris, even.
These are the most savage of the ball.
What about harem pants? Yeah. Like MC Hammer pants.
I think that's like even further into like Mesopotamia or something.
Sure, sure. That's the cradle of civilization, and I'm referring to the pants.
But that was a clue. When you start looking at artwork, you know, does this, if this person has pants on, then they're considered Eastern or a threat.
This is like Mr. Glass and Unbreakable.
It really is. Like keep it coming. I know you got. We're gonna be here for a while. So I love it. I want this. Okay. So. I'm guessing that we don't have any point of reference for the, you know, then we'll fight the shade lines or,
Well, you had the Battle of Thermopylae, which was that. It was the Spartans going up against the far greater outnumbered Persian army. But Spartans were different than your usual Greek. They weren't, what I would call wordy folk. They really were just warriors. They would take their sons from their mothers at the age of 7 and they would start training. And even the women were warriors. Not as much as the men, but the women were too. Everybody could fight. And there was a saying, when the men would go off, the mother or the wife would say, either come back with your shield or on it. And that was a real thing.
Wow. They're not,
because those shields were expensive.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, they all had to look the same.
You know how hard that is?
That's why it's important to write your name inside
the shield.
It's like when you throw your miter board at the end of the...
Right, you got to find it again.
Yeah, you don't want to be the one guy who didn't write his name on his shield.
Well, and you would think that loincloths would be less expensive because it's not as much fabric, but not so, because you need the support system.
You got to build it in. You got to build that in.
Yeah.
You got to counterbalance those spears.
Persians get y'all hot.
So that was the actual thing.
The
movie 300 did two things. It brought attention to Frank Miller's work,
right,
to the actual publication 300, and it did bring attention to the Battle of Thermopylae, which prior to 300 coming out, I was aware of the comic, but not really aware of what it was about. But oddly enough, I was vaguely aware of the battle.
It's hard to miss. Never
put the two together.
So
you have a lot of Greek history is a lot of little battles. Like, but Thermopylae was a really big deal because it stopped the Persians where they were. Now, granted, it was for a short amount of time, but the threat to all of Greece was handled by the Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we also have the Oracle. I'm sorry.
Kelly's going.
The Oracle is really important, and I'm really glad that it was in there, because the Oracle, if you want to talk about Greece, the Delphian Oracle was the thing. Various countries in the ancient world and in the Mediterranean would still go to consult the Oracle to see whether or not they should actually go to war, like they saw in the movie, to see whether or not, you know, like if there was a decision to be made about a country, most of the time they would send an envoy to the Oracle at Delphi. Was she high? Probably. Was she... Probably not. She actually would sit on a stool, on a tripod stool, and she was fully clothed. It wasn't as sexual at all. That was like really creepy.
Well, that's Frank Miller for you. That's what that is.
Yeah, you have to sex things up to get the kids interested in history.
The kids interested. You need to throw some boobies. And some lepers or something. What those guys were.
Right.
Yeah, I think they were all cosplaying as that guy from Papillon.
Oh.
You know, branching out because he needed to get some other, you know, face makeup option.
Yeah.
So, the Oracle actually, so they found certain temples in Greece today. There's one, I'm pretty sure it's Delphi, but where they have had oracles, like there's a section of it that is today, there's a sign, don't come near here, because there's some sort of crack in the crust of the earth and gases come out and people will pass out. Literally.
Oh, yeah, I've seen about that, where they're literally like noxious gases that they think that the leak level level may have been less in ancient times, but just enough to kind of get you a snootful.
Right, exactly. Enough time to get you inspired.
That's right. So
what they would actually do is they would write the questions out in a way that seemed to favor them. So you were sending envoys to suck up to the oracle, to the priest who was delivering the question to the oracle mostly. It had really very little to do with the actual oracle herself. She was just kind of hanging out doing her thing. But the priest, if you're pretty much, you know, like paying them off, giving them bribes. I need a positive outcome. That wasn't out of the ordinary.
It'd be really nice if our question is, should we go to war with our immediate neighbors? The answer was yes.
Right.
We'll make it worth your while if it's yes.
When sometimes, like, the answer would be written out in this poetry that nobody really understood. So they would interpret the poetry that the priest wrote out.
So it's kind of like a Dylan song.
That's awesome.
They had lots of really cool different oracles, but she was just the most famous.
I was saying before we started the show, when Kelly and I were talking, that the thing that amazes me about ancient Greece, more than ancient Rome even, is that somehow they have figured out a way in comic books to allow ancient Greece to still exist in our modern day comic books. So
yeah,
whether it be through Themyscira, whether it be through Mount Olympus, whatever it is, it's just like, make a right, keep going. Eventually you're going to end up in ancient Greece. So,
and you have to imagine, you know, you never really see this. I stand corrected. You see it a bit in later incarnations, post-Perez, of the mm-hmm. Wonder Woman pantheon,
right,
where they all of a sudden got stylish.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise I'm thinking, you know, everybody's walking around in Clash of the Titans cosplay, and they're like, you got to imagine after all these centuries, it's like, hey, Zeus, you been down to Greece lately? Yeah, mind blown.
Man.
Dang. Right. Wish they had some of that stuff when we were, you know, on top. Some cool shit down there.
Why do we keep – I've asked this in every episode. I'll probably continue to ask it in every issue. But why do we keep revisiting ancient Greece in comics? You know, because we've got – you got your Hercules. You've got – you know, we will talk at length and probably for the next year about Wonder Woman. You've got you've got Ares. You've got any number of the Greek pantheon running roughshod over the Marvel Universe at any given time.
Right.
You know, why do we find it necessary to keep revisiting this time period where, when I was speaking of Egypt, I think it was a combination of the mystery, because a lot of it wasn't that – it was documented, but not in the way that we think about documentation at this point.
Sure.
And there was that weird mix of how did they build the pyramids, technology meets meets polytheism with jackal heads. So, of course, you're going to go to that with comic books, because like Weldon was saying, they already epitomize what we think of as a comic book character. So – why do we keep revisiting Greece? Why is this something we keep going back to?
Okay, so I'm going to have 2 points on this.
All right.
I'm sorry, Cole. You can go if you want.
No, it's okay. I want to be – I'm trying to decide if – do I want to follow this, you know, like
right.
Maybe actually the opening act.
And now Conway Twitty.
The headliner would come out after, perhaps. I was just going to make this quick observation that I think that this truly is your first Age of Heroes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Historically, that's, I mean, other ancient civilizations had their heroes, like Gilgamesh, for example. Yeah. But who cares? You know, Wayne Knight shows up. Gilgamesh, we got Gilgamesh here.
Nobody cares.
But you get into ancient Greece and Rome, and these characters, these pantheons of gods, and equally the human heroes become so much larger than life that they live on from the BCs into the ADs. Mm-hmm. And all the way up to the 80s.
Ray Harryhausen.
Exactly. Right? They get all Harry Hamlin.
Oh, but, I got a Harry Hamlin once.
Rainbow.
At Easter.
That's actually my favorite sandwich, the old Greek deli.
The Harry Hamlin? Yeah. Gotta watch it for knuckle hair, but it's good.
That's right.
So,
but you know, go ahead, because that was really my big observation, is it carries nicely into comics because it is an unchronicled or, you know, an unpublished kind of heroes and villains and the whole thing. And lends itself beautifully to being carried over into the heroes and villains realm.
Easily translated from one to the other, yes. But I also am going to throw in some things here, which, first of all, the Greeks never used their religion in the way that modern people would use a religion. They didn't use their religion for moral reasons. Their religion had nothing to do with their morality. That's what they had their philosophy for.
Okay.
That's where they followed that. This is Greek, ancient Greek and Roman scholars will talk about this. The ancient Greeks never used that. They only used their religion to appease the gods so bad things wouldn't happen to them. And if something happened to them that was bad, then they really were pretty accepting of it. Like I just did the ritual wrong. They didn't like go into it. There wasn't a real emotional thing for them. They just did rituals, and it was in the stories. It's actually in the Odyssey. One of the coolest part is this ritual where Odysseus needs to talk to Tiresias, who's in the underworld, and he starts and he does the whole ritual in the Odyssey. He talks about the blood and the way he fills up this thing, and the spirits start coming out because they're at the edge of the underworld. And the first guy that comes out is Elpenor, who died, and they didn't know he died. And they have to go back and bury him so that he can then travel on. So that's what I'm talking about. It was more of kind of like a
because there's always some friend that derails the whole trip.
That's right.
It's true, and that's true, and it just happened to be open. The other reason is, I mean, I think that your gods were humans. They were like humans. They were just as petty as humans. They just happened to have power as opposed to just regular humans. So Zeus went after all the tail he could get. Ares was warlike. Venus, you know, not Venus, Aphrodite, she slept around. Hephaestus made stuff. Like, they were specifically... their epithet also added, the epithet is that actual secondary name, which would then connect it to a certain area of Greece.
Okay.
So before the Iliad actually came out, they all had their local gods, but then the Iliad comes out and it like unifies Greek religion. But so then it would add the epithet.
The Iliad did that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because you had all those gods. You know, like the stories that they were already talking about anyway, but it was like first written down. So you're talking about like it's not just going to be 1450 when the poem was actually written down in quotations. It's going to be all the time before that when people are passing along the oral tradition. Oh, that's my god too. Well, it's like that, but it's you know, Zeus of the Seven Hills or something. They would add the secondary name for the local god so it was connected.
Well, then is that also wherein you got things like Zeus sometimes being, I believe it was Zeus, was referred to as Abendexter?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
they had that hit kid series, Abendexter's Laboratory.
And he's banging people in the shape of an eagle.
That's right.
The whole time. Gross.
So the other reason I would say is that the part of the reason we always go back to Greece and Rome is because our forebears did so in a certain way. So Germany emulated Rome. And so when the Victorian England comes around and they want to pick up an ancient civilization to emulate, they can't choose Rome because it's already been chosen by the Germans. So they picked Greece. And the reason why we read things translated now very differently than we did back in the late 1800s is because the Victorians wanted the Greeks to be very specific. They wanted them to – they wanted to emulate them, but only the good parts. Okay, so you still have these plays that were translated, then you would come across a colorful metaphor, like Ms. Spock would say, but they would leave it in the Greek because they figured if – somebody was smart enough to read the Greek, then they were probably okay enough to deal with the actual word.
Wow.
Was really graphic. Like, some of this stuff was super duper graphic. Like, I remember putting my hand up and going, is this really what this says? Yep, that's what you think it is.
Wow.
Because the comedies were just outrageous, and they would make men be women by burning off their pubic hair with a torch. Like, it was something else. So that's why I always encourage people, like, go back and read the ancient stuff. It's way grosser than you ever think it's going to be. Yeah, and it's hilarious, actually.
It's fascinating that you mentioned that kind of Victorian England, because throughout, as we were talking about the prehistory, the age of dinosaurs and ancient man, and Egypt, and now with Greece and Rome, and where do we find that appeal and translating it into the comics? And in both of the previous issues, I was going to like try to dodge it this time, but I was citing a very Victorian sensibility that never went away. We still have this sort of emergent world fascination with the things that we had only as a culture begun to discover by the Victorian age and really start to take a close look at.
Exactly. And the Victorians colored a lot of, well, especially in America, because inherently we were a part of that. I mean, Victorian times happened during our Civil War.
Right. Yes.
We're still, I mean, we're not necessarily British anymore, but our grandmother remembers being British.
Right.
Exactly.
So we have this cultural, you know, this cultural drip down from the stories and the attitudes and what was proper. And some of that was still ancient Greece. And that idea of being really, really smart. The Greeks were, you know, they considered the Greeks, they emulated them because of their philosophies, not because of their realities, which mirrors all that, like, you know, like unconscious sex drive that the Victorians had was reality for the Greeks.
Right.
They had no problem with having sex at all. But they hid that. The Victorians hid that part of it.
Well, they don't want to admit a kind of – you're reaching an era where we don't want to admit kinship with the past, at least the parts that are more awkward, as the Victorian term that was – a little clever turn of phrase, NSFW, was coined.
Ye old Snapchat.
Right.
It had an E at the end. It had an E at the end. Don't worry.
Absolutely.
It's an accent mark.
It's silent.
It's silent. It's silent. Cool. Well, speaking of discovering a new way in a new world, I think that a good elision between ancient Greece and ancient Rome would be to talk about, and just in general, because finally, and I think I've written both of you this text message that says, finally, we get a Wonder Woman movie. It's out now.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. It was everything that we'd always wanted a Wonder Woman movie to be. But that's another interesting, I guess, idea and parable in heroism that now we see replicated many times over, and sort of the stanchion for the female superhero character, which was we didn't get. This was the beginning of, we're emulating something that was the beginning of the real kind of heroine figure in our worlds, right? Because we had, Wonder Woman was, for all intents and purposes, an ancient Greek or Roman kind of trapped in time character that made it to our world and kept her, not only her warlike ways, but her philosophies and her ideas about the way things should be, relatively unchanged from writer to writer and throughout time, besides the S&M stuff that they had to put at the beginning because, you know, because the guy that invented the polygraph's a perv. But beyond that, like, I think that that's an important piece as well.
Absolutely. And I think that
I confused everybody. I'm sorry.
No, no. You didn't. We're just dumbstruck with you doing something other than dick jokes.
Well, this is a show about ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Who dad?
Oh, wow.
Who dad?
But the interesting thing with, you know, with Wonder Woman is in the film and in the comics, she's always had this tendril that reaches back to the ancients. And that's an important part of all of these periods, is that there's sort of a two-way street that runs between the periods that we've talked about. Ancient Greece is the one that we get the most coverage of these periods to date. And that's because so many of the characters not only owe some lineage to that, we often get a chance in the comics to go back and visit that very lineage.
Right, right.
And we get to go back and see these characters in action in the ancient world and then move forward to the point where we see their influence remaining to this day. And again, the big challenge with this was, how do we find enough material in comics that takes place within the time periods? And as it turns out, a whole lot of it just seems to be about jumping back forward to the present and seeing the influences like, say, Maxi Zeus in Batman.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely true.
Just, you know, so steeped in the ancients that he imagines himself to be some sort of demigod or something. But also, one of the comics that I highly recommend from time to time when it crosses my mind, and what better point than this, is a very obscure little indie called Deadface.
Okay.
Which would later be, I'm racking my brain to remember who published Deadface originally. Catherine and I stumbled on some years ago, just, you know, yeah, picking up some stuff. And what was, well, the original was Deadface, and then later when Dark Horse picked it up, what is it, Eddie Campbell, who was the artist from Hell with Elmer.
Yeah.
This was his precursor was Deadface, and it later became Bacchus under Dark Horse, and it basically follows the modern adventures of the ancient god, Roman god of wine and revelry, who has returned from the underworld and is has a vendetta against Theseus, who's still alive, running around under the guise of the under the name Joe Theseus.
I remember you talking about this before. That's awesome.
Such a brilliant series, because Joe Theseus winds up befriending the Eyeball Kid, who was a son of the Hundred-Eyed Giant, whose name escapes me.
That Hermes, actually, yeah, that's the guy that Hermes put to sleep.
Exactly. And all of that plays into the story. They're constantly revisiting these tales.
Okay.
And it turns out that the Eyeball Kid got his name because in the ancient Olympus, he managed to, I think he killed Ganymede and took over as the cupbearer. Got Zeus pissed drunk and stole some of his thunder in the same way Prometheus had, but he didn't know how to control it and wound up. And the Eyeball Kid is basically has this long, you know, elongated face with 10 sets of, or 10 pairs of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And he, is very befitting of a kind of a creature type from Rome or from the ancients. And he winds up killing all the gods inadvertently. Or at least everybody who was home in Olympus, and then winds up, you know, throughout the rest of eternity, kind of wandering aimlessly, and got his. But he can fire the lightning of Zeus from his fingers, and he got the name of the Eyeball Kid in the Old West of America, and meanwhile Joe Theseus is running around as kind of a gangster type. Running all kinds of operations, and how Theseus becomes immortal is that a very dejected Poseidon tells him, if you want to be immortal, have my immortality. So once a year when the low tide, he has to go down to like Venezuela or somewhere and drink the water from that's collected in the eye sockets of Poseidon's skull that, you know, this one low and the tide is available to him.
That's fantastic. I need to read that.
Wonderful story, because he's running around with because all the Pantheon are dead, he's wandering around with this old dude who was stuck down in the underworld with no one to run it. Hades was gone, and the underworld had gone to pot, and it's just a fascinating tale. Then later it was revisited as Bacchus, and also Deadface doing the islands with Bacchus. Kelly, I think you especially would get a kick out of it, because you would speak to you in deeper levels, because it is so steeped in a lot of the ancient traditions. And
yeah, I'm hearing a lot of buzzwords that I recognize from different sources.
Oh yeah, it's the whole thing about Theseus trying to rescue his friend who was trapped in the underworld, stuck forever to a chair.
Yeah.
His ass off trying to pull him out of the chair, and there's the joke in the comic where he says, that's why to this day they say Athenians have no asses.
to piggyback on that, as we move into Rome, because I do want to touch on Rome before we have to inevitably leave. there was a comic that I stumbled upon. Actually, I think I found it with you, Kelly, at the Geek Fest when we were hanging out at one of those tables. I just pulled it out of like a $2 bin. It was Matt Fraction, and it's called Odyssey. It's ODY-C. So
okay.
Matt Fraction, I have to mention him. That gives that gives Cole carte blanche to talk about Alan Moore later. So I've broken the seal on that. Retells the Odyssey in the most weird Matt Fraction sci-fi space epic way I've ever read. Okay. And it's super psychedelic and it's super weird, but it has but basically it runs 24 issues. It mirrors the Odyssey pretty much front to back, except it happens in space, and I think Odysseus is a woman named Odysseia, and they gender bend the whole thing, and it's weird, and it's in space, and it's about the journey home where they're trapped out and they're trying to get back, and they got to go through like hellscapes and fight monsters, right. and there's a Cerebus, but it's like a weird
like
space.
They do.
Yeah, and it's kind of part and parcel for literally everything that's come after the Odyssey, but they own it and they make it their own, and it's weird and over the top and just Matt Fraction. If you remember, I talked about Casanova, which is another one of the kind of weird psychedelic spy books that he did. It's awesome. If you get a chance to pick it up, I picked it up on Kelly, I'll let you borrow it because I've got it. I finished it. But if you get the chance, when Kelly's done, I'll send it to you. It's really, really cool. Like it's super bizarre and awesome. So wonderful. That's all I wanted to say about that is that it's a future representation of the Odyssey. Yeah.
The Odyssey is amazing in so many ways. And we don't give it enough. I feel like it doesn't get as much cred because the actual end of the Trojan War was in the Odyssey and not in the Iliad. The Iliad ends with the funeral of Hector, and not the Odyssey. So it's great, and I think everybody should go check it out, even if it's the Simpsons version. there's a lot of what the Odyssey and the Iliad do is they set up, you know, like what comes later, which is the Aeneid.
Yes.
And the Aeneid, when you get to Rome, things are a little bit more propaganda than necessarily like just literature. You have some things that are happening with literature, but the Aeneid was pretty much just to connect Julius Caesar to the goddess Venus, and that's Augustus going, hey, I'm divine and you should do what I say because I'm in charge now.
So essentially the ancient Romans invented retconning.
No, that, yes, wow, if anything else comes out of this arc,
we now know exactly
how
ancient retconning truly is.
And by the way, the comic is the comic is written in hexameter as well. Matt didn't mess around. He did it. How do you pronounce it? Is it Dactylic? I can never remember it. This one I've known for since ancient Greek class. I can't remember how to pronounce it. Hexameter, whatever it's written in, he tries to mirror that in the comic.
Dactylic?
I'm polydactylic. I have a I speak with a thumb that sticks out to the side. It's weird. It's a weird thing. Okay, so moving on to Rome. Let's move on to Rome. The only thing I know about Rome is that it was built in a day. Tomatoes are named
contrary
after
contrary to popular belief, it wasn't.
Two days? Were they off by like a couple hours?
I think it took a week and a day.
A week and a day. That's something else, I think.
That's a
little So what do we know about Rome? What do we know about Roman comics? I've got a few things.
It was started by a couple of crazy kids who suckled off a wolf.
Yeah.
Those crazy kids.
History of Rome, yes.
Yeah.
By Livy.
One of them
you
got
to read some crazy weird stuff. The History of Rome.
Well, one of them got an entire culture named after him.
Yes.
The other had to wait centuries killed. To have an alien race named after him.
The Romulans. Yeah, see, I know that. I know that. I get that reference.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So
Romans.
Go ahead. Talk about it. because I don't know.
So you have Rome, and you have the conquering, and you have the building, the Eternal City, and you have the... Then you have what is more considered, like, the Roman writing versus the Greek writing, where the Greek writing was philosophy, and there were plays that honored Greece, and they were competitions in music and in plays, and it was a really artistic culture. Rome was not that. Rome was the, we're going to build some really great buildings and take your culture.
Right.
And they would make Romans, like, there were Roman copies of Greek statues that were in bronze that during the Middle Ages, those were melted down. So what we have is the Roman copies, which are more, you know, everybody, even when you're copying something, it's not exactly the same because you're going to make it Roman. And Romans, like, my favorite way to describe the difference between Greece and Rome is my ancient Greek professor. We were talking about witches, and we were studying my favorite ancient novel, The Golden Ass, which, if you get a chance, I always recommend because it's great fun. But it is not for the faint of heart. Some of it is really gross. But part of what they're talking about is the difference are the witches. And so ancient Greek witches were like Circe, and they were beautiful, and they would entice you with their womanly arts and their flowing hair, and you would drink the potion, and then then you become a pig or something. Roman witches were nasty. They were gross. They were always out digging in the cemeteries looking for things. This is written about specifically. And my ancient Greek professor describes them as old, drunk, nymphomaniac hags.
Nice. Nice.
So here's Rome versus Greece. Rome's buildings lasted way longer than the Greek ones, but their writing, it was different. They wrote more in prose than in poetry. So you have novels, where you start with novels. And Roman legends come from not only from Greece, but then Etruscans. But then you also have the violence. So in the comic, you know, where we have comic books, we have tales of just these ultimate violence stories. You look back into Rome, and you have the gladiatorial game and the races, the chariot races. You had put something up. It was Roman. What was that? It wasn't Odyssey. It was the Roman one. Which one was that, Andy? You sent me something.
Here's the thing I learned about Rome when I was about Roman comic books based in ancient Rome, when I was doing the research for this show, is that if there is one culture, one country that loves ancient Rome, loves it, it's the Dutch. I don't know why. Really? The Dutch love the ancient Rome. Pasta, la dinar profit, aguara, malrex de Roma. I'm slaughtering these, but these are all names of Roman.
No, your Dutch is perfect.
My Dutch is perfect. That was a great Whose Line Is It Anyway delivery of a one-liner. But yeah. They're all Dutch. They're all Dutch. The Dutch love ancient Roman comics. And the one that I found that I think Kelly's speaking to is called Eagles of Rome. That's apparently a big one that I was doing research on follows Arminius, who is a German prisoner, and then you get the story. You get standard kind of historical fare of brotherhood and betrayal and soldiering, mm-hmm. and wearing hats with plumes and shiny armor, yes. and rubbing each other with oils and then fighting. And...
Oh yeah, they do love that. You know, the Germans wore pants. They're barbarians.
The Germans were...
No kidding. Tacitus wrote about it in Germania. Yeah, they wore pants.
So...
Those villains.
So, Cole, do you have any... Because I struggled outside of Eagles of Rome and all the Dutch stuff that I couldn't even begin to try to decipher.
You're a fucking Dutch stuff.
I'm a bunch of...
And we talked about this last week. We didn't talk about it on the show. It's a comic in French, but I think we discovered it was not French in origin.
It's Dutch. I bet you it's Dutch. I'll put
probably
money
Dutch
on it.
Yeah. With that Asterix.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I think Asterix was Dutch. I think it was. What is
probably
up with these?
Was Dutch.
What was up with these Dutch? What was up with the Dutch? I can't. I don't know.
I've never heard anybody say that so many times in 5 minutes. What's up with the Dutch?
Somebody explain the Dutch to me. Can I get a Dutchman on the show? Why do you love...
Some Dutch stats.
Franco-Belgian. Okay, so it wasn't Dutch. It's Franco-Belgian. Astrique.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, because my Afro-Canadian friend was very familiar with it. I'd seen stuff from Astrique forever. I mean, like, as far back as I can remember seeing comic stuff, this thing had been around for ages, and it takes place, by and large, in ancient Rome.
Okay.
And we forgot to mention, we were talking about ancient Egypt, there was actually a chapter in the adventures of these. It's more of a comic strip than a comic book, or I guess initially. Or, you know, it's one of those comic books you'd have to go look for because it wasn't widely circulated in the States. But there was a chapter where they meet Cleopatra.
Yeah.
And which I guess ties in pretty well with Rome, because this is the period where Rome and Egypt were having that bit of a courtship going on, as it were. But it was, I think, when did that? Oh, no wonder it seemed like it had been around forever. It was published from October 1959 to October 2010.
Wow, people love that.
So are we the barbarians? Because when we're looking at Astrique and all of the Dutch historical comics and all, you know, what I'm seeing is more older countries, right? Countries that have been around and have mm-hmm. aged, really mm-hmm. enjoy the historical comic book. Whereas we're like, there's not enough pouches on that guy. We got to put some more pouches.
Yeah,
I think the history as Americans, we're not as. I mean, frankly, the European cultures are going to be more steeped in, especially ancient Rome, because a good part of those countries were once a good part of ancient Rome.
Yeah, they still have, they still have buildings or, I mean, or markers.
You can't
still part of their lives.
You can't go out and put in post holes without, you know, digging up some pieces of Roman pottery.
Pretty much.
That just nobody cared about.
You can't lay pipe without finding an aqueduct.
True. That's how they found Nero's Golden House.
Oh, I was making a dick joke. Is that damn it, Kelly?
But
way to class up his dick joke.
Go on,
hey,
Roman.
I was trying to make a dick
Nero's
joke
Golden
too.
House.
I'm talking about the Golden House, okay?
Oh, that's true.
It had oil coming down from the ceiling for real.
That's fantastic.
Tinted oil. We just, you know, the setup. You gotta let me get through the setup. Anyway.
Yay.
The moist side of Rome.
Nah, this is totally Roman. The thing to remember also about the history of the people in Europe is also that Rome went on for a really long time. It started in 753 BC. Technically, that's the official date, the official year, though it probably started, you know, give or take a couple years. And
there was all that preliminary to set up the building. They had like a soft opening.
Yeah, they had a prequel. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they had their grand opening.
And then they went through a monarchy, and then they went through a republic, and then they went through the empire. So you're talking like, and then it got to the crazy Byzantine time. So you're talking like, it doesn't end to like 450 AD. So it's a long time. A lot of weird leaders. That's also part of it, is you can be completely fascinated with one part of the Roman Empire, and it's just a small sliver. Julius Caesar.
I just want to point out that it took 231 issues of this show before we could get the word Byzantine.
That's true. I used the word labyrinthian way too much in the early days of this show. I'm glad that we're bringing it back around to Byzantine, at least. Cyclopean. When I was really into Lovecraft, Cyclopean was a word that was bandied about.
Herculean.
Herculean, yes. So why... Okay, so we can point to a lot of Grecian influence in modern comics. We can point to going back to ancient Greece in modern comics. We've done so. There isn't as much of that with Rome, I don't think.
I actually had a Roman influence occur to me that exists in comics in many ways.
Okay.
One of the most obvious is Planet Hulk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where the concept of the arena.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And gladiatorial battles plays very heavily in an outer space, you know, an extraterrestrial kind of way. But it is effectively mimicking what we recognize as Westerners, mm-hmm. the gladiatorial battles of the ancients. And I'll challenge a little bit further this notion. If you know a little bit about especially the Colosseum in Rome, but the same thing was playing out, I think, on a smaller scale all over the empire, because everybody had to have a Colosseum.
Yeah, everybody
did. Anybody. I mean, it was like, I mean, granted, it may have been like the dirt track in Hillbilly Town compared to the NASCAR.
You had to have farm leagues. You had to have AAA ball out there somewhere before you got to the Colosseum.
Yeah, something. But if you really look at the ways in which, you know, it passed itself off as entertainment in ancient Rome, there was some seriously effed up stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
I mean, like, they would have people going out and capturing every living creature from the width and breadth of the empire so they could parade it back to the arena so that everybody could say, look, here is what we shall call an ostrich, and then we'll have some guys go out and slaughter it.
Right.
There were some species of animals that the Romans actually made extinct because they killed all of them in the arena.
Well, I think
a lot of that was at the soft opening, too.
Yeah, it was. It was at the soft opening. Speaking of Nero.
That wasn't even meant to be a dick joke.
Yeah, my favorite.
Nero.
I want to, really real quick, I want to touch on that aspect of the Colosseum to connect that to arcade.
Oh, nice! Well done, sir.
Because it was sort of like Scaramanga and Nero all molded into one.
You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. And take it one step further. Go to the Beyonder.
Oh, yeah.
Go to the Secret Wars. Pick these gladiatorial combatants up and drop them in a battle world where you're fighting for my pleasure. That is a prevailing concept in comics. That happens.
Yeah.
Everywhere. That's awesome.
Or the Grandmaster with the Contest of Champions, mm-hmm. which was sort of like reverse extinction, in which that particular comic willed about 15 different characters into existence just so they could have someone from a particular country that had no heroes.
Nobody has a Tina
Turner.
What
about? Do you guys remember? It was like 8 years ago. There was the Countdown to the Arena. It was a four-part series. And it was right around the time, like the Blackest Night happened.
Yes.
Where they had, it was an Elseworlds arena, and they had gladiatorial games, but they would pull in three different supermen, and they had to battle to be the Superman.
Yes.
And three different Wonder Women.
Oh, wow.
And Batman. It was incredible. But it happened, it was the big three, but then there was others. I think they also did it with like Green Lantern.
They did it with everybody. Batman. They did it with the Ray. Anybody that there was an Earth 1, Earth 2 kind of corollary.
Multiverse, yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah. They did it with Starman. They did it, yeah.
They did Starman. It was wonderful.
And, of course, it was Monarch that did it. His name was Monarch, ladies and gentlemen.
Monarch, yeah.
That's awesome. Good job. Nice catch. But absolutely Planet Hulk, which, you know, is derivative. Cole, you were absolutely right. Absolutely derivative of, you know, the Spartacus gladiator story where...
Oh, yeah. I mean, right down to the point where Hulk has borrowed an extra large size version of Leonidas's helmet.
Right. I think
the armor, though, artistically, the armor is right on.
Yeah.
Because he has, in some sections, he only has one armor on one arm, and that was a complete gladiatorial armor setup.
Oh, yeah. Pass the savings on to you.
Damn it. Visually, one of Cole's favorite characters mimics, and I think in persona mimics this time period, which is the gladiator.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so, like, he has the big red mohawk, right? At some instances. You know, he's very...
He's either got, like, this sort of, like, bald in the front mullet, or a mohawk, depending on the incarnation.
Yeah, yeah. And he's stentorian in demeanor. You know, it's very much what you would think of when you think of a gladiator. So, I mean, the influence is rife. And there's one thing I wanted to say, because we're going to have to start wrapping it up, is I think one of the things that we start seeing, especially with this time period, is the realization in comics that you don't have to go back in time to get to ancient Greek or ancient Rome. You don't even have to have them exist on Earth at the same time period as you when you can make another world in space that's ancient Roman or ancient Greek.
And that's so true.
And we see that a ton. People like the X-Men land on Greek land, and everybody's got togas, and they're, you know, philosophical, but they're being invaded.
Oh, that's right, because they took a page from Burroughs and found a subtropical... you know, Roman outpost that somebody tell them. I mean,
that's right.
Because that's where they met the mutant Magma.
Magma.
And I'd forgotten that they were like, you know, it kind of flies back when Burroughs was writing pulp.
Right.
But in like 1990 or, you know, 89, 1990, it's a little harder to swallow that there's some last outpost of Rome that didn't realize the rest of the world had moved on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Claremont was going to the well. That's what was happening.
Which also suggests in both cases that someone had a very low opinion of the ability of Romans to be inventive.
Oh.
It was like the Roman Amish. They just stopped.
The Roman Amish! They're like, we're good. We're good here.
We're done. We got running water.
I used all my ideas.
Yeah. It's just like, we're used up. We got everything we need here. Have you seen our aqueduct? Go ahead.
Aqueduct. I will tell you one more Roman tidbit. I know that we're about to wrap up, so this is my favorite piece of Rome that I can offer the masses, and why I encourage everybody to go back and read some of the stuff, because if you look at the 12 tables, there's actually addendum, many addendi to the actual laws, and where you come into situations with divorces, that's where it gets really good. So in ancient Rome, if your wife was caught cheating on you and you did not divorce her, you were then considered a pimp. This is in the law, in the addenda.
Did they use the word pimp? Tell me they used the word pimp.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
It was. It was used the word, pimp. You were considered a pimp.
Oh, yes. I have it here. And he shall be given a large foppish hat with an ostrich feather.
Exactly. You got a real snazzy toga.
And he's going to say words like, "Aww." That's not a word.
And he's going to get a theme song.
That's right. A pimp. So, that's fantastic.
That is amazing.
That is totally legit in the writing.
Kelly, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was definitely the third issue of a story arc. I will give it that.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, man. Cole,
I
want to
give a quick honorable mention.
Yes, please.
To, you know, I mentioned Maxi Zeus. We can't look at Roman and Greek-inspired modern character types without a quick nod to the Incredible Hulk character's pantheon.
Okay.
Okay.
Where everybody had these, like, different body armors or powers and whatnot, and they all, like, took names of different key characters, because it's like the first time I'd ever encountered the name Atalanta.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Looks like Atlanta outside of, you know, the members were Achilles, Agamemnon, Ajax, Andromeda, Atalanta, Cassiopeia, Delphi, Hector, Jason, Paris, Perseus, Prometheus, Ulysses, and Ulysses, apparently, and Hulk. We have a Hulk.
Because every team needs a Hulk. Yes, I remember that. You were... And I was thinking and I don't remember, and you guys will have to help me out here. Wasn't there a corollary with Two-Face in Batman that would correlate to some Roman or Greek?
Because there was also
yes, thank you. There was also what, Cole?
I think there was wasn't there like some obsession on the part of Black Mask with Janus?
Yes. Yes. You're right. Like
seeing future and the past at the same time.
Yeah. I bet you that there was a period of time in Batman where it was super like classically influenced stories.
Oh, and I can't believe I was going to let this slip by, and I get to invoke Alan Moore as promised.
There we go.
With Top Ten, when there was a couple of issue arc where the Peacock King was sent to Grand Central, which was a basically everything about this particular world was based on everything Roman,
yes,
and ancient Greek, and he winds up being thrown into this arena.
Yes, Cole. Yes,
course, because one of the members of the District 10 or the Precinct 10, which are the core characters of Top 10, they're kind of their dispatch officer has the Janus Two-Face.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in one very clever scene, they were out partying all night, and the backward-facing face is fast asleep on the job because she's so worn out.
That's right. Yes. No, you're... Yeah, yeah, that's awesome, because that was they handled everything in the arena. Where in, you know, in Top 10, in kind of the main story arc, they're cops. They uphold the law. They're trying to, you know, uphold the law in a world, or a city, I guess, a city full of super-powered people. And in their world, in the world that they went to, everything was handled in you know, gladiatorial combat. And in order to be taken seriously, he had to fight in gladiatorial combat and win to be heard, essentially. And it was... really cool. That's awesome, Cole. That had completely slipped my mind.
Yeah, how did that get away from me? So we have to give those some nods to, and again, yeah, just recommend Top 10. Good Lord, it's so good.
It's so good. So good. All right. Let's wrap her up. Cole, what are we doing next week?
Well, before I tell you that, in keeping with this particular story, okay, this is issue 232. Which means I'm not going to do the math. Do it yourself. As we've said often, this show is plotted well into the edge of 2020. Mm-hmm. We have nearly 400 issues plotted, and I'm going to go ahead and announce right now that our 300th issue is titled "This Is Sparta."
Nice, nice, nice.
So, with that, I will say that this is the Tonight Cole Universe at TonightCole.com.
Tonight, we dine at Arby's.
You can write Lost. I started turning into Sean Connery.
You were really slipping into a Ramirez, which is an Egyptian Scotsman sword fighter that fights with a Japanese sword.
So write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Watch for our tweets on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. Look for myself and Eddie Medina of the Rantcore Pit and the Rantcore Pit Live on our summer roadshow tour. We're very close to, I think next weekend we're going to be at Geek Out in Burleson, Texas, I believe starting at noon. We're doing our first store appearance on the tour. Check us out over at the Rancor Pit Live. We can now watch us on DallasLive.com. We have a new home for now. And if you're keen on the roadshow tour or on many of the stops being conventions, visit Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info, because you can't go if you don't know.
There you go. Kelly, thank you again so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And,
you got it.
And classicking us up.
With dirty Roman stories.
Well, that we'll be back in touch with you on those dirty Roman stories.
That's right.
Anytime, guys.
Take those offline. So, yeah, join us next week. I think next week we're doing – is next week Wild West, Cole?
No, next week we
– Oh, yeah.
Next week, my good friend Steve McCauley will be joining us. We really miss having Steve on the show, and I'm just so thrilled he's going to be joining us for Get Medieval.
The reason
have some medieval times.
The reason this whole story arc happened was because of Get Medieval, and Cole and Steve's ongoing saga of Camelot 3000. So,
absolutely,
I'm so glad that
I spoke to him earlier today. He's like, I don't know, I know Merlin and Shining Knight and the Demon. I'm like, are you kidding me? The year we spent waiting for Camelot 3000.
That's the reason we're doing this, man. All right, everybody. So buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. Thanks again for tuning in. If you like what you've heard, go on iTunes, rate and review us. That's how people find us. You are all amazing. We wouldn't be doing it without you listening. Like Cole was saying, hit up JediCole.com. Ton of good stuff on there. You can find live shows. You can find Rantcore. I'm sure there's a ton of stuff coming. Is the stuff from Famous Monsters there yet, or is it coming still?
There's some stuff, the audio broadcasts from Famous Monsters are not up yet, but we're kind of holding back because we're going to be doing 5 episodes to be published as part of the Force of July, our annual celebration of July and the Force and the whole nine yards.
Nice.
We're kind of restricted to just doing 2 live shows a month right now because there's a show on alternate Sundays. So, unlike in years past where we would do up to 4 shows in July, four live shows, we're going to be doing 2 live shows and 5 pre-recorded shows because there are 5 Sundays in July. So, be sure and check that out in the Jedi Cult Universe, the Rancor Pits annual, The Force of July.
All right, Woo! We're getting out of here. Say goodnight, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, and enjoy your dirty Roman stories.
That's right. Filthy Romans.
Yeah.